Mr. Norell is here. Good to see you. How are the kids? Good? Kids good this summer? Not driving your wife crazy? Too bad?
Not too bad.
Okay, I think we can go ahead and get started. Good morning. Let the record show that it is shortly after 8:30 a.m. on July 28, 2014. We are present in the Public Service Commission hearing room and the State Capitol in Bismarck for the oral argument scheduled in case number PU 13871. My name is Wade Mann, and I'm the administrative law judge designated to preside over this hearing today. This is simply going to be oral argument. We've already had the public hearing on the application on May 2nd. All the evidence was entered into the record at that time. This is not an evidentiary hearing. There will be no new evidence. It will be the argument of counsel for MDU and Capital Electric, and the commissioners will have the opportunity to ask questions and have them addressed. Before we get started with the arguments, I will have each party note their appearance for the record, beginning with MDU.
Dan Kuhn from Montana Dakota Utilities.
Okay, and Capital Electric?
Matthew Olson on behalf of Capital Electric.
Okay, and Commission Advisory Staff?
Thank you. Ryan Norrell on behalf of Commission Advisory Staff, and at the table with me is Jerry Lean as well.
Okay. And just before we go ahead and allow each party to begin with their argument, a couple of preliminary matters. Each side will be given 45 minutes for argument, and the 45 minutes will include any and all questions from the commissioners. MDU as applicant will be allowed rebuttal time, which will come out of its allotted 45 minutes. And as MDU will begin, and as any of the commissioners have any questions, they can feel free to interrupt and ask those questions at any time, and counsel for both parties will address the questions. If at the end of the 45 minutes for either side, the commission still has questions that they feel should be addressed, we can go from there and address any, how much time will be needed and so forth. But for now, it'll be 45 minutes allotted per side. Does any party have any other questions before we get started with the argument? Mr. Kuntz?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Olson?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Commissioners? Okay. Mr. Kuntz, you can proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Commissioners, first I want to take this opportunity to thank you for letting us address some of the issues that have come up in the post-hearing briefing as well as some of the working sessions. Obviously, this is an important case to Montana, Dakota, as well as to its customer Menard and its other customers throughout its system in North Dakota. Attached to my brief in anticipation of this oral argument was a chart that summarized the issues that were in the Commission's notice of hearing. What I intend to do is just go through each of the issues that the Commission had set forth in its notice of hearing and address some of the things that have come up on each of those issues. The first one was, from whom does the customer prefer electric service? Obviously, Menards testified it prefers its electric service from Montana, Dakota. There were comments made, however, that the Commission doesn't like rate shopping and that Capital Electric argued that Menards only selected MDU because of price savings and noted that price savings aren't guaranteed. First of all, I would not consider what Menard did here as price shopping. I consider price shopping in the utility context of when a customer goes between utilities trying to gain concessions from one utility by playing off the rates or services of another utility. There was no indication that Menards did that in this case. All Menards did was compare the prices between the two utilities. I think any smart consumer is going to take a look and do a price comparison in making its selection of a service or purchase of goods, just like you and I would do if we were purchasing a vehicle or a can of beans at the grocery store.
Your Honor, let me ask you a question. So do we just interrupt Dan?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Commissioners can interrupt at any time. There's no need to go through me. Anytime you have a question, just go ahead and interrupt him at any time, and he will address the questions.
Sure. I just had a quick question, Dan.
Sure.
Your comment, Dan, Mr. Kuntz, about didn't MDU or Menards testify they didn't even know there was two people? when they, I'm absolutely convinced that's what they said. They said it wasn't until we got deeper in where we even thought there was two companies that could provide service.
I believe they testified at the time they selected the site, they weren't aware who the electric providers were in that regard. And I think then as they went about their development, if you will, and realized there were two providers in the area, they went to both of them to find out what particular services they had available and what their prices were. And like I said, all they really did was compare
the
prices.
That was my question. That did the point, though, is that it wasn't even a factor of the company coming in there. They were just, well, they picked the area. And then once they got into the area, they're going to pick the lowest cost.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, because, Your Honor, because one of the things, Commissioner, one of the things they testified that it wasn't just the price that made their selection of Montana, Dakota.
That's the point. I don't think it was the price of... I interrupt. You know what? I'll just be quiet.
Well, I want to answer your questions, Commissioner.
But I think you get right. That's right to the point. Is why we're here, because I made it clear that I thought that this is a practice that I didn't like.
Well, and we don't like. Believe me, as a public utility whose rates are published, and we can't vary our rates at all. We don't like rate shopping. We abhor it as much as anything. But I think that's something different than rate comparison.
I would agree.
Simply
with that.
Looking and saying, okay, you know, what do you offer? What do you offer? Okay, I'm taking that in my consideration. They also testified that they preferred Montana, Dakota because of its favorable experiences as a customer of Montana, Dakota's at its store in Bismarck. They liked Montana, Dakota because their reliability history was better. They liked Montana, Dakota, and I think this is particularly important, because they had a demand response program. And they were looking for something. They had a favorable experience in that other locations. They liked demand response because it allows them to control their bills. Capital Electric didn't offer a demand response program. Montana and Dakota was more responsive to their requests. They testified that they felt they got back to them quicker, more responsive in demand. And then I think finally they noted that Montana and Dakota is regulated. And I think that's important for a consumer of this size to have the opportunity to know that their prices, whatever they are, if they're low or not, they're regulated, and they're going to have an opportunity to go to an independent agency. If they have issues about price or service concerns in the future that they're not going to have from an unregulated co-op. We recognize that prices aren't guaranteed. Price differences aren't guaranteed today, but they're the best indication now of what the prices will likely be in the future.
Your point to me, Dan, to close this, and I'll let you be, is that the cost was just one of the factors of customer preference, is what you're trying to hammer home here.
That's one of the things that Menards looked at. And like I say, particularly the demand response program, the reliability, you remember they testified, was very important to them. And the fact that they were regulated all played into their decision. And obviously cost was a part of that too. But that wasn't the only factor. I think they would have preferred Montana, Dakota, even if the prices had been equal, I think is the key, because of these other factors. And I think the other thing is, even though the prices aren't guaranteed in the future, they know that any price increases by Montana and Dakota are going to be cost justified, and they're going to be subject to review. So, and there's also comments made that customer preference isn't controlling for a utility. That's true. You got to take in all the considerations, but you don't dismiss it either. I mean, you have to take a look at all 10 considerations and weigh them, and consider all of them in your determination. You just don't dismiss customer preference. And I think in this case, when you're looking at a customer that's coming in here with 250 full-time jobs, the kind of economic impact that this customer is going to have and the sustainability of that business over the future, I think customer preference in this case is entitled to a little bit more weight than what you would maybe give a residential customer or some small commercial customer in another case.
Dan, since we're talking about customer preference and how big of a factor that should be and how much it should weigh in this case, it seems to me in all the case law suggests that it differs away from customer preference to the broader issue of public convenience and necessity being served. So how is it that MDU serving this customer serves public convenience and necessity, or having MDU serve it is required in order to serve the public convenience and necessity?
I think all 10 of these factors, when you line them up and you weigh them, determines the outcome of public convenience and necessity. And the customer's preference is just one of those weights. It can't control. You can't grant a certificate of public convenience and necessity solely on customer preference, of all the other factors weigh against granting that service to Montana and Dakota. But if everything else being equal, and the customer preferred the public utility, you could grant public convenience and necessity on that basis alone. But you have to look at all the factors together, and customer preference is just one of those. The next issue is what electric suppliers are operating in the general area. Obviously, that's both Montana, Dakota, and Capital Electric. That really doesn't favor either party in this case. The third one is what electric supply lines exist within at least a two-mile radius of the location to be served, and when were they constructed. Both companies have supply lines within 2 miles of this location. The lines have been there for a number of years, although Montana Dakota has been providing service in the area to the town site of McKinsey before Capital Electric was in the area. Capital Electric does have a single-phase line that adjoins this property. However, those lines can't and won't be used to serve this particular location because they are single-phase lines. This location needs three-phase service, and Montana Dakota has the closest three-phase service. Capital Electric points to its substations and says it has two substations in the vicinity, but neither one of those substations are within the two-mile radius. Only Montana Dakota has a substation within the two-mile radius, and its substation is just over a mile from where this location is at. So when you look at it, Montana Dakota has a closer three-phase service, it has a closer substation, and has been a service provider in this area for a longer period of time. To the extent this issue favors anyone, we believe it would favor Montana Dakota. Number four, what customers are served by electric suppliers within at least a two-mile radius of the location to be served? And this issue really gets to who is the primary provider in the area. And when you're looking at orderly development extensions, you look at, you know, who's already serving most of the customers in this particular area and determining where is public convenience and necessity served by a particular extension. If we look at the evidence in this case, Montana Dakota has 29 customers within 2 miles. 28 of those 29 are within 1 mile. Capital Electric has 11 within 2 miles, and only 4 are within 1 mile. MDU has 7 times more customers within a mile of this location than does Capital Electric. Capital Electric does have 3 customers that are closer to the location itself. But one of those is a railroad signal. The other two are farmsteads and the single-phase service that won't be interfered with by Montana Dakota's system. All of MDU's 28 customers within a mile are served off its McKinsey distribution service, which will be upgraded and as a result of extending service to the Menards location that will also be used to serve the Menards location. MDU has considerably more customers in the area. It's the primary electric supplier within this general area, and so therefore we believe this factor also favors MDU.
Judge Mann, this is Ryan back here.
Go ahead, Mr. Neurel.
May I also interject questions if it is appropriate on behalf of Commission Advisory Staff?
Yes, you may.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Coons, in Capital's brief, they lay out an argument contesting MDU's assertion that they would be the primary electric service provider in the eastern half of the town site of Village of McKenzie. Are you familiar with that, and could you address that briefly? How would MDU respond to that that allegation in Capital's brief?
That's really the issue is orderly and economic development in the area. It's issue number seven. And the issue is which of the electric suppliers will be able to serve the location. Which suppliers extended electric service would best serve orderly and economic development electric service in the area? First of all, with respect to the eastern half of the city of McKinsey, Capital Electric made the argument that they would be the presumed provider in that particular eastern half because it isn't developed yet. And they made two arguments. Number one, that Montana Dakota, although it has a franchise from McKinsey Township, that franchise isn't valid, they contend, because they say that the township doesn't have authority to grant a franchise. Second of all, they say that under the TIA, MDU would need a certificate of public convenience and necessity to serve those undeveloped lots. First of all, with respect to the township issue, the commission doesn't have authority to basically determine the validity of another entity's actions. So that the township's action franchises given to Montana, Dakota has to be presumed to be valid. But even if there's any question to that, I would refer the commission to section 580601, rather than the section that was cited to you by Capital Electric. And that section is titled General Powers and Duties of Board of Township Supervisors. The section reads, the Board of Township Supervisors has the following powers and duties. And then it lists a number of powers and duties, and number 10 under that is to grant to any person the right of way for the erection of telephone lines, electric light systems, water or wastewater systems, or gas or oil pipeline systems over, under, or upon public grounds, streets, alleys, or highways. That's a franchise. That's what a franchise does, is gives you the power to put your system in the public rights of way within that particular location. So what Montana Dakota has is, from the township, it has the right to extend its facilities in all those unplatted and platted, or platted areas within the township, McKenzie Township. And to suggest that there was that the township didn't have the authority to do that is simply just plain wrong. They were looking at the wrong chapter when they cited to the commission to that. Clearly, Montana Dakota has the only franchise to serve those platted areas.
Where is where and when were those platted areas recorded, and by who and how, you know, that map that shows the developed and the undeveloped area, where is that official?
You'd have to go to the county recorder's office. I mean, we didn't anticipate there was going to be any issue about our ability to serve the McKenzie town site. There's nothing of evidence in the record to say when those lots are recorded or how they're recorded or where they're recorded. So I can't come in here now and tell you that, you know, this is where you'd find it, but they would presumably be recorded at the county recorder's office. But we did give you the franchise from the township supervisors that showed that Montana Dakota has got a franchise, and as the record stands now, has the only franchise to provide service within the town site of McKenzie. Capital Electric also made the argument that we would need a certificate of public convenience and necessity to serve this town site since McKenzie's not incorporated. Well, we already do have a certificate of public convenience and necessity. We have a certificate of public convenience and necessity that was issued by this commission back in 1928. The TIA, when it was passed in 1965, never revoked prior certificates of public convenience and necessity. That we introduced that certificate as part of Exhibit Number 11. It's never been revoked. It's still been valid. We've been serving the town site of McKenzie for nearly 50 years since the TIA has been enacted, and no one has ever questioned the validity of our service or our authority to provide service to McKenzie. So I think both of those particular arguments that Montana Dakota would not be entitled to serve those platted areas are just plain wrong. We already have a certificate. We already have the franchise. And to suggest that Capital Electric would be the presumed provider of those when it has Montana Dakota is the exclusive provider out there, it has the certificate of convenience and necessity, is wrong.
How about this notion that you didn't file this map within 90 days of 1965 and therefore your franchise isn't valid?
I don't know whether there was a map filed in 1965 or not, but we had a certificate that we already had a certificate. We didn't need to go get another certificate or file a map for an area that we didn't have a certificate for. Recall that prior to 1965, a utility had a couple of different ways to extend its services outside a city. It could get a certificate of public convenience and necessity, or if it was in an area that was contiguous to an area that was already served, it could just extend its services. The TIA addressed the latter situation and said you can't just extend those services outside a city anymore without getting a certificate of public convenience and necessity. And so what the TIA says, you have to file a map for all those areas that you've been serving before that you didn't have a certificate of public convenience and necessity for, so we've now have a record of where your services were. That didn't affect the areas that were where you already had a certificate. It didn't pretend to revoke the certificates that have been issued in the last 60 years or 50 years prior to when the TIA was enacted. And like I said, I would point to the fact we've been serving that area for 50 years. If we didn't have any authority to serve McKinsey for the last 50 years under the TIA, I think somebody would have brought it to our attention. And also, I don't know what if there was or wasn't a map filed in 65. Presumably there was. I haven't checked it to see what was on it, but I do know we've already got a certificate to serve the McKinsey town site. Want to go back then to where we were that with respect to the next issue is reliability of service. And the issue is, what is the differences, if any, between electric suppliers available to serve the area with respect to reliability of service? The staff has noted, and the commission traditionally finds, that both providers are reliable providers of service. And I think we can say that for any public utility and any co-op in North Dakota, that they're all relatively reliable providers of service. But that isn't the issue. The issue is stated in your notice of hearing is, what are the differences between these two with respect to reliability of the service to this site? And in that regard, we look first to the outage history. Montana Dakota has had only one outage on its three-phase system in 14 and a half years. That's 0.07 outages per year, less than one in every 10 years. Capital Electric has had five outages in 6 years on its system off the Minocan substation. That's 0.833 year outages per year. That's 12 times greater than Montana Dakota's. Capital Electric will also cite the outages that we had on the single-phase line that serves the Ryberg farm, but that single-phase line is not going to be involved in serving the Menard site. The relevant portion
of
the three-phase
system. How would you answer the question, because I thought a lot about this, an outage is defined differently. It appears to different people at different times at different places, so to me it's really almost impossible to compare outages because there's not a standard reportable what is an outage. I mean, it's different.
Well, the companies keep track of their outages on their various systems, and that's the evidence that you have in front of you.
There's no standard defined by law what is an outage that we can measure a gallons, a gallons, a gallon. An outage is not an outage is not an outage.
Well, Commissioner, I guess if you wanted a definition of what each of the utilities considered an outage, we should have probably brought that into the hearing. We don't have that in front of you. All you've got is what was presented, and each of the companies provided what was presented. But I think the other thing that you can look to is the difference in the line length between the substation and the location to be served. And the commission has said in the past that basically that distance of the line between the substation and the location to be served.
You'd agree it's hard to compare outages because there's no standard value.
There's different, obviously there's different. A 10-minute outage versus a 3-hour outage is different. But there, you know, still an outage is an outage. And as Mr. Lipp testified, theirs is an underground system. When they do have an outage, it generally takes a little longer to find and repair those type of an outages as to Montana Dakota's, which is currently an overhead system. But you also look at, the commission has looked at the length of radial line as an indication of reliability. It's 8 miles between the Minocan substation and the Menard site. It's about a mile and a half between Montana Dakota's McKinsey substation and the Menard site. So that's another indication of reliability. It's also another indication of why the outage history, you would expect the outage history on Capital Electrics would probably be greater than the outage history on Montana Dakota. So I think those two, Commissioner, kind of come together and show that you would expect Montana Dakota system to be more reliable. The other thing that you look at in that difference of between the substation and the site to serve is voltage drop. Both companies provided evidence that their systems would stay within industry standards on voltage drop, but because Montana Dakota substation is closer, you would expect the voltage drop to be less as well.
What about the backup?
The Sterling substation. Yes, Commissioner. That was the other argument that Capital Electric had, is that their Sterling substation can serve as kind of a backup in the event that there's an outage on its line. Yes and no. You're still going to have an outage. It's just that you're going to switch it now, so the outage is probably going to be less lengthy because now you're going to switch it and serve it from the Sterling substation. But the Sterling substation is not capable of serving the Menard site. It's not sufficiently sized. it could maybe serve a part of the site, but then you're still going to have an outage on the rest of the site. And how are you going to serve the other customers that are currently served off the Sterling substation? So unless you upgrade that Sterling substation, which is not planned, its costs weren't included as part of Capital Electric's proposal, you still have got an outage. You can probably serve part of it as a backup once you switch it over, but you're still going to have an outage unless that Sterling substation is upgraded.
But does MDU acknowledge that there is at least some benefit to having a backup substation as Sterling is, even if it can't provide all the power, it can at least provide power for security or some of the very essentials?
Commissioner, I think it gets it closer to the reliability of our system. I think if you upgraded the Sterling substation, then I think you'd have a system that essentially would be comparable to what Montana Dakota's will be once it's upgraded.
How would you provide that redundancy, though?
Pardon?
How would you provide that?
We've got a looped transmission line coming into the McKenzie substation at that point, and then it's a mile and a half radio line from that substation. They've got a mile of radio line that's going to come from the intersection of their three-phase line. You're still going to have about a mile of radio line in either situation. The only difference that you would find is if our substation went down. In the unlikely event the substation went down, they would, if they upgraded the Sterling substation, they would have an alternative substation to feed that site that we would not. That would be the only, after they upgraded the Sterling substation, that would be the only advantage that they would have with reliability. But remember, the Sterling substation upgrade is not part of their proposal. It's not planned. They don't own that substation. They haven't included the cost in their cost comparison. So as the systems stand today, based upon length of radio line, based upon outage history, Montana Dakota system is the difference between the two is that Montana Dakota offers a better, more reliable system at that location. The next issue is which of the available electric suppliers will be able to serve the location in question more economically and still earn an adequate return on investment? And that's a two-part issue. The first is which can serve the location more economically. If you look at simply the cost of extending the existing three-phase systems, just the lines from the existing three-phase systems to the location, Montana Dakota is slightly cheaper, $32,000 versus $44,000. But if you consider all the costs to serve a location, you also have to consider Montana Dakota's upgrades. Montana Dakota is proposing as part of this service, it would have to upgrade its substation by putting in a new transformer and converting from a Delta three-phase system to a Y system, and also converting its distribution system from a Delta three-phase to a Y three-phase system. The total cost of doing the line extensions to the Menard site, providing secondary service, the lines within the Menard site, and the upgrades is $192,000 investment. That equates to an annual cost, return on investment, and taxes of about $28,000. Ms. Aberle provided testimony to that. If you look on an annual basis, that cost is about $28,000. Capital Electric's investment that it would need to do to extend service within the site and add to its three-phase system is about $110,000. Its annual cost to do that is probably around $9,000. It doesn't have to pay income tax and probably has a lower cost of capital, so figure maybe $9,000. So you got about a $19,000 a year difference in those investment costs of what that relates in terms of cost of service. And remember, Capital Electrics doesn't include the cost of the Sterling substation upgrade. So then you compare $19,000 a year that you've added incremental cost to serve this system by Montana Dakota versus Capital Electric. Compare that to the cost of generation and transmission to get that there, which is also part of the cost of providing service to the location. The commission has recognized that that should be considered in the total cost of serving the location. Montana Dakota is about $62,000 cheaper per year its rates in serving that location. So if you take the 19 off of the 62, there's a net cost difference there of about $43,000 of Montana Dakota serving this location versus Capital Electric's extension of service. We recognize, again, these cost differences aren't guaranteed. They could be greater, they could be less, they could be the same. But it's the best evidence and the only evidence we have of the respective costs of providing service. And as I stated before, that any cost increases by Montana Dakota will be cost-based and reviewed by this commission. The second half of this issue is the return on investment. Montana Dakota, through Ms. Aberle, testified that its rates that generate the $513,000 will provide it a return equal to what the commission has granted in the past. Plus, and I think this is critical, it will return $296,000 to common costs for the benefit of Montana Dakota's other North Dakota customers. That stays all to the benefit of North Dakota customers, every nickel of that. Capital Electric's argument on return on investment, that was because its rates are higher, its return must be adequate. You don't need a master's degree in economics to understand that argument doesn't make sense. Just because your rates are higher doesn't mean that you've got a return. You could be losing money and not have a return on investment simply by adding volume. There is simply absolutely no evidence in this case to determine what return Capital Electric will receive from providing service here. That was a choice they made. They put absolutely no evidence in here, so there's nothing to support a finding that this commission could make that Capital Electric can earn an adequate return on its investment, because they provided you no evidence of what its margins is. So when you look at this issue, we believe Montana Dakota has showed that it can serve this location more cost-effectively and earn an adequate return on investment. The next issue is orderly and economic development.
Mr. Coons, if I could, one question. Back on page 6 of your brief, you discussed it, and in your oral argument, you discussed the $110,223 for the Capital Electric's cost to extend the lines and the annual incremental cost of approximately $9,500. Where did you get those numbers from? And are those in the record?
The $110,000 is in the record. That's the cost of extending the lines within the Menards location of about $65,000-$66,000, and another $44,000 that Capital Electric would need to extend its three-phase service from along I-94 down to the Menards site of about a mile. That's so that gets you $110,000. With respect to the $9,500, they did not provide any sort of return information on there. So what we did there is simply looked at a return, I think, comparable to what TAMI used for Montana Dakota's return, but without grossing it up for taxes.
Okay. Thank you.
Which supplier would best serve orderly economic development? First of all, Capital Electric's extension is only going to benefit this site. I mean, that's all it's going to do is extend its three-phase service from I-94 down to this site. That's the only location that's going to benefit from this. Montana Dakota's extension is going to upgrade its entire distribution system in McKenzie. Certainly there's going to be some sort of economic development as a result of this Menards doing what they're doing out there. And this issue doesn't require the commission to determine specifically what development is going to occur. What it requires the commission to determine is which extension is best going to serve that development should it occur. I think it's fairly reasonable to assume that there's going to be some additional ancillary development associated with this site. And if there is, who's in the best position to provide that particular benefit from that development? We believe Montana Dakota's upgrade of its system from a delta to a Y system throughout McKenzie will then allow it better to extend service to those undeveloped areas. It would allow it to provide service to any commercial customers that may need three-phase service in the area. So it's going to improve the service to its existing customers, but also potential new customers in the undeveloped area of McKenzie. It already serves far more customers, as I testified before or argued before. We serve about seven times more customers than Capital Electric. So the
Dan, how far do you, before we get too far away, how far do you feel, whatever way the commission ends up on this decision, that that implies the adjacent facilities get that load? Whoever gets this plant, then all of a sudden the gas station that pops up to the south or the housing development, let's not say it goes to the McKenzie direction. Let's say it goes the other way, a new housing development. I mean, do you feel that each one of these is going to be dealt differently with the commission, or this will set the precedence for further growth in that area?
Both. I think, it's certainly going to allow us to upgrade and expand our system within the town site of McKenzie. Now, if the development, the next house over or the gas station is just on the northwest side of McKenzie, for example,
right,
I think we would be in the better position to serve that site and come in here and ask for a certificate to serve that site. On the other hand, if the gas station is on the intersection, one of the intersections of I-94, and I'd have to look at the line, and therefore the site was closer to Capital Electric in that situation, we're not going to be in a position where we're probably going to be able to prevail on a certificate of public convenience and necessity. And remember, of course, that once you get outside the town side of McKenzie, Capital Electric can serve wherever they want if the customer requests their service. I mean, that's one of the ironies of the TIA and Capital Electric citing, well, unregulated customer preference can lead to duplication of facilities. Well, yes, it can. We see it all the time. But Montana, Dakota can't extend its service based upon the only unregulated extensions that occur are those of the co-ops. Every extension that we have outside of a city is subject to regulation.
So wouldn't it be, I believe you made the comment that if Capital ends up successful in this, that this plant would be the only place that would benefit from that. But if they get the plant and all that development ends up being to the south and to the east, they would also benefit from that build-out. So I don't know that your point there would be valid.
Well, to the extent it's to the south and the east.
Straight east or northeast?
Well, east. I mean, east of their system. I mean, you'd have to take a look and see what sort of development it is.
You can't just say it's just they're the only one who's going to benefit because we don't know where the growth is going to go.
You don't, but we're the town site of McKenzie is the only platted areas available for development. I mean, that would be a logical source for development. There's a distribution system there. You would certainly expect some of that development there, and I think the point is that system's probably going to have to be upgraded one way or another. And the upgrade to serve Menards is also serving that town site area. Now, I can't say if there's another commercial site that's developed 2 miles to the east.
Sure.
Who's going to be in a better position to serve that? I don't know. But we can say within that area, that general vicinity of that area, the upgrade of our system, we believe, would be better served orderly and economic
development. How do you go about the methodology of deciding how you're going to work with the co-ops? Because the Williston area, I know it's different, but I think it's similar, the mindset of the company when they go through these factors, that dealing with Williston, you've got MDU in the middle and Williston, the co-op around there, a very intricate service area agreement. But Capital is treated the same as the other co-ops in the area. What's MDU's protocol when they go through these? Because these are very complex issues and who might go in the future. And it seems like in the past you were able to draw a box and say, this is ours. What's so different about this that's previous so everyone was treated the same when you walk the internal process?
Each of the service area agreements, and I know this was a frustration the commission has that we don't have a service area agreement for this area. Each of the service area agreements that we have, and I would say that our company has probably been more aggressive in obtaining service area agreements.
Agreed.
With our co-ops than any other utility. I think we've worked harder at it than anyone. But each one of those is different based upon the area and the co-op. Some of the co-ops are much more willing to take a broader global view and figure out, what works best. Others are only want to deal with, this situation at this time at this location. And traditionally, we've had our most success in developing service area agreements in the fringe areas around growth communities. So, and frankly, the theory has been that there's sufficient growth in these growth communities where there should be we should be able to share it.
So that would perhaps be different in this case than other cases because this might be the only big growth in this area.
And how would you have determined a year ago that Menards or 2 years ago that Menards was going to come in here with this type of load? And how would you? And that's the problem. And these smaller communities that haven't seen any growth in 40 years, if anything, they've been going the other way. There's not a whole lot there to argue about in terms of trying to compromise and share because there's nothing to share. You're lucky to hold on to the existing customers that you've got, and so we just haven't been able to. Unlike other states, if you go to South Dakota, for example, they've got maps like we have for the telephones here in North Dakota that divide up every single mile in the state is in somebody's service area. We just don't have that, and for the most part, it still works. I mean, yes, this is a big case. This is important to both companies, but, you know, how many of these have you had in the last 4 years, 6 years?
One.
Yeah, most of them are getting decided. You know, the company's looking, and most of them are pretty clear-cut, and I think the reference that you made, how do we get to the next one, most of them are pretty clear-cut. It's usually doesn't get to this type of a dispute.
Thank you.
So we believe we would best serve orderly and economic development. We already are the primary provider in the area. We have the franchise to serve McKinsey. We have a certificate of convenience and necessity to serve McKinsey. Our upgrade of the McKinsey distribution service system would not only benefit provision of service to this location, but also to the town site of McKinsey. What about wasteful? The next is... would approval of the applications result in wasteful duplication of investment and service? Both providers are going to have to make a new investment. They can't serve it from their existing systems. Capital Electric has argued, well, if Montana Dakota gets this, it's going to have to upgrade its McKinsey system and or substation, and that's going to duplicate the existing capacity we have at Minokin. We believe that's wrong for a couple of reasons. First of all, you have to ask, why is that excess capacity there in the first place? It wasn't put there to serve this site. Either it was grossly overbuilt, or it was built to serve other growth that Capital Electric expects to receive in that rural area, whether it's from larger farms or whatever it is. So if that substation was sized correctly to serve the rural area, then the upgrade of the McKinsey system to serve this load and the town site of McKinsey is not duplicating the Minokin substation, because the Minokin substation is going to be needed, presumably, to serve the area that it was built for. The other thing is that, frankly, if Capital Electric is going to serve this location, they're going to have to upgrade. Somebody's going to have to upgrade that Sterling substation. They simply cannot serve it reliably out of that Minokin substation. They're going to have to upgrade the Sterling substation. And so, therefore, the issue is really, where's the duplication of service? We can upgrade the McKinsey substation or we can upgrade the Sterling substation. Both are proposing to use transformers. So the costs are fairly the same. So where's the duplication there? And if Montana Dakota is going to have to upgrade its McKinsey substation anyway, of growth in McKinsey, is really the upgrade of the Sterling substation the duplication, or is it the McKinsey substation? We suggest that it's Montana Dakota's upgrade would not be a duplication of any system that Capital Electric has.
But is there anything on the record that indicates enough certainty that there's going to be other growth that would... give merit to the argument that MDU needs to upgrade that facility if they're not given this CPCN?
Yeah, we can't point and say, you know, there's going to be this development for sure or this many houses for sure, but any development that occurs in the town site of McKinsey is going to require us to change that system over from a delta to a Y. A Y system is a more modern three-phase system. Developers now want their systems underground. They don't want overhead lines. They want pad-mounted transformers. So if any significant development occurs out there, we're likely going to need to upgrade that system. So, but is there anything in the record that says, no, there's going to be 5 new houses out there or 10 new houses? No, we don't have that information. But I think we can reasonably assume that development is probably likely to happen. And then finally, will the services unreasonably interfere with the services systems the other? From an operational standpoint, no. Neither extension of service is going to interfere with the system of the other. We do have to cross their single-phase line, but that's not going to interfere with that single-phase line. That single-phase line can continue to serve its customers, and it's not going to be used. It wouldn't be used to serve this location anyhow. Cap Electric makes the argument that it interferes, Montana Coast Extension interferes with their ability to use these revenues to support its other customers. Well, there's no evidence that they've put in as to what that support would be. In contrast, we have put in evidence that our service, it would directly provide almost $300,000 of contribution to North Dakota customers, North Dakota MDU customers, to help control costs for those customers, contribute to the common costs of those customers. You don't have any evidence of that in the record with respect to Capital Electric. So to the extent this argument applies to either one of us, the only one that would support in this case is Montana Dakota. I believe, in summary then, we have the customer prefers Montana Dakota. We are three-phase and substation is closer. We have more customers. Our system's more reliable. We can serve it more economically and still earn an adequate return. We would favor orderly and economic development. It would not result in wasteful duplication and wouldn't unreasonably interfere. Therefore, we believe we've met the requirements for the issuance of the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question to clarify. So is it MDU's assertion then that regardless of what was done with TIA in the 60s or anything subsequent to that, that the CPCN granted, 86 years ago to Northern Power and Light Company is still in effect and authorizes now MDU to grant service to all of that platted area of McKenzie in sections 28 and 29?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Olson will proceed in the same manner. Mr. Lafferty, does Mr. Kuntz have time remaining for rebuttal?
2.5 minutes.
Okay. This time we'll proceed with Capital Electric. Mr. Olson will have 45 minutes. Same procedure. If any of the commissioners or Mr. Norell have questions at any time, they may interject. Are you ready to go, Mr. Olson?
I am, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Good morning, commissioners. Once again, we're here to discuss this matter. May 2nd, we put on evidence, and this is kind of the second time this case has been briefed because we submitted proposed findings, conclusions in an order, and now we've submitted briefs. I honestly am dreaming about this case, so the amount of time that we've spent on this, I wake up thinking of facts about radio lines and of the sort, so I'm being baptized by fire. As I've listened to the working sessions, I want to acknowledge and thank you guys for taking your time to look at this case. I know it is important to both MDU and Capital, and so I know we're here today because you want to get it right. Basically, as I've listened on the internet feed, all the commissioners have basically said and their staff have said this matter could go either side depending on the way the facts are viewed. And so it is important that we're here today. Basically, the commission has found that some of the factors are a draw. Some can go for MDU, some can go for Capital, depending on how each factor is viewed based on based on a different angle. And so this case.
How would you say the commission has found anything? We have not found anything.
I shouldn't say found. In your discussions, I apologize. You haven't found
anything.
Maybe
leaning a certain way. But
leaning. Basically, just listening to the three of you discuss the various factors.
Because sometimes in our work sessions, I'll just go out there just because someone doesn't say anything doesn't mean they agree, and it can go any different way.
No, I misspoke there. You haven't found anything. I'm just listening to your discussions and how you're wrestling with the issues. So basically, the TIA, the Territorial Integrity Act, was enacted in 1965 to resolve disputes between public utilities and the rural cooperatives. Our high court has had a number of cases to look at the TIA, and it continues to come back to two primary purposes of the TIA. One, to keep to a minimum wasteful duplication of capital, intensive utility services, and two, to keep to a minimum conflicts between the suppliers of electricity. So when we're looking at these 10 factors, I think we need to always keep these two in mind. I didn't hear MDU in its either today or in its brief address either of those two. I think because once they delve into those two primary factors, I think their case crumbles. Basically, I'm not going to regurgitate my brief. I trust that each one of you have read that. I did go through the 10 factors. So I don't want to go into every detail there. But basically, when you look at those two primary factors, it is the High Court's opinion, North Dakota Supreme Court's opinion, that certain of these factors carry more weight. They have discussed customer preference, that it is one factor to be viewed. There is, at this point, no exception to customer preference for large loads that the legislature has enacted here in the state. If you look at MDU's conclusion in their brief, they point the commission to those exceptions. I find them to have no application today because we are not South Dakota or Montana.
Mr. Olson, if I may, this is Mr. Norrell. Do you view, though, that there would be a difference if this is a single residential customer 10 miles outside a public utilities service area as opposed to a very large industrial service or customer immediately adjacent to a public utilities service territory?
I guess I can't speak to my client on that behalf since that's not before us today, but I suppose there could be a number of economic factors that could be present. So I don't want to downplay your question. I just don't know the answer. I suppose the economics are going to carry more weight depending on the type of service. This just happens to be a perfect storm, a large load with both the public utility and the cooperative in the general vicinity. So I can't speak to that directly, but I suppose it could have an indication.
Okay. Do you know if there are any Supreme Court cases where there are a load of this size that the court has looked at, or are those a lot of residential cases that typically become before the Supreme Court?
I'm not aware of any very small loads going to the Supreme Court. I know there are some pre-TIA cases dealing with, you know, a load going to a facility that has a microwave facility. I'm not even sure what that is. But, you know, most of the time it's involve a larger load where the legal costs are, they want to spend them, and usually that's not the case, and we're dealing with a single-phase residence. And I guess MDU would also submit to that as well, that the economics usually play a factor in a lot of things.
A two-part question here. Sure. Part of your quote on the TIA's purpose was to keep to a minimum wasteful duplication. Does that quote recognize that there will be some duplication, since it didn't say to stop duplication, but to keep it to a minimum? And if so, is a case where the preference is based not just on the price, but also on the reliability, on the availability of a demand response program, on the fact that one's a regulated company, and probably to me most importantly, the responsiveness that they felt in dealing with the company? Is that not an example of where duplication would be understandable and acceptable?
I suppose that's a matter of interpretation. In looking at the quotes from the Supreme Court and that the Cass County case in 1988, you know, it just talks about keeping to a minimum wasteful duplication. Again, it's saying a minimum, so it's not saying total duplication, because there always is going to be some duplication out there, because each company is inevitably going to have capacity to take on new customers. So I suppose in that sense there will always be some duplication. But in looking at the factors, the court has wanted, you know, not only the commission but litigants before they bring cases to look at various factors. I would like to, you know, going back to customer preference, I listened to MDU today discuss, both in its brief and today, Menard's position. I went back and listened to the testimony on May 2nd. I think we're overstating the over-responsiveness of MDU. If you listen to their testimony, Steve Manner says, when requested the quotes, Capital gave us their prices, in that basically they seemed indifferent because they just had prices to give them. They didn't have any programs at the time. And then when you listen to him speak about his the responsiveness that we're talking about regarding MDU, it was their explanation of their programs. And in that sense, we're making them to be more responsive because they were explaining their programs. It was also testified by Mr. Nygren that, and it was admitted by Steve Manner, that Jesse Kane was the representative from Menards that contacted Capital Electric and asked for their rates. So Mr. Manner was speaking to things that he had no part of those communications, but basically they gave him their rates. At that point, I am assuming that they thought the prices were better, and they didn't even have any more communication with Capital. There was discussion and testimony during Mr. Manner's testimony that, you know, MDU can provide this three-phase interruption. When it was then discussed on our case in chief, where basically Ron Lipp testified that was never even spoken to them, that was important. I mean, they spoke about their wood plant and how it was important to have these 350 horsepower, you know, all these machines working, and that if one phase goes out, it's going to wreck the motor and all those things. And Capital was never even aware of that was one of their needs because the communication virtually ended after they gave them their prices. So their over-responsiveness here, I think it's being overplayed because MDU just explained their programs, which at that time Capital Electric didn't have. So like I said, I'm not going to go through every factor. I just want to talk about a few things that MDU briefly discussed. One was about the closeness of services, and it said, our three phase is closer. Again, I addressed this in my brief, so I don't want to kick a dead horse. But here, basically, that is disingenuous because they've also said that their three-phase line as a Delta system, is virtually worthless. So if we want to go back to the closest workable three-phase system, Capital is closer. It's 1 mile away, where they have to extend 1.6 miles back from their substation upgrades, the McKenzie substation. So that can't be viewed as a plus for them because basically that upgrade has to be there. There's been a bunch of testimony, and there's discussion today about who can serve the eastern part of McKenzie and the importance of that because that must be where there's going to be growth because there's a plat. Again, I put this in my brief, but the only evidence we have is that the eastern part has been farmed, and it always has been. There's no evidence of who owns that property. All we know is it's farmed, and it has been. To necessarily assume that that's where the growth is going to be depends on a farmer who may own that. We have no idea where the growth will be.
Let me ask you a question on that. Okay, Commissioner Crisman brought it up earlier. I want to make sure I'm understanding what I think you're trying to tell me. The platted area right now, going back to the agreement made back before the TIA, how is that not MDU's? I view that's MDU's growth area. Where this Menards plant may be is outside that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the question. This is outside that platted area, but I view that platted area as that's MDU's. So you're disagreeing with that premise?
I would disagree with that in the sense that it's a village that's been platted. I believe there was some testimony about being in the 1920s, something like that. Basically, Exhibit 11 from MDU has a couple things. It has a couple of the documents from the previous the predecessor to the Public Service Commission granting some sort of document to the Village of McKenzie. To argue that 1928 document gives MDU an unlimited franchise moving forward, to me, it doesn't make any sense. We have the TIA that came into being in 1965 that deals specifically with anything outside of a city.
So what's your best – I mean, I'm trying to help you out here in some thoughts, actually, is that I view the platted area. I do. I look at it as MDUs. But Menards is outside that area. So what's the argument you would make if MDU has that platted area that gives you the right to serve outside that area? That's the argument I'm looking for. From you.
Outside the area?
Yeah. Where the Menards plant is at, potentially. That's outside the platted area, correct?
Yeah.
So what's the best argument that says you should serve the area outside the platted area?
Why? I guess in looking at the primary factors, it's the wasteful duplication because we already have the load that's there. I think for them not to concede the wasteful duplication, I guess I'm not seeing it. They have to increase their load, which we already have. to argue that well, they must be wasteful duplication because they already did it in the past, well, that's not what the 10 factors. The 10 factors are asking us to look at what's present right now. They, for whatever reason, whether it was maintenance or upgrades or anything, for whatever growth, they have it, and MDU doesn't. The other thing is just the economic developments here. We have a single-phase line that comes and hugs basically the property. And to, I guess, in furthering the principles of the TIA, the primary factors of avoiding conflict and minimizing duplication, I don't know how it's not ruled in favor of Capital Electric. If we're going to rule, I guess I see what happens here. There's so much growth that's happening in northwest North Dakota. Anytime there may be growth in a rural area, and if you would rule for Capital Electric, it's going to cause the public utilities some judgment and some concerns before they go and try to get a new load of a large service that happens to be out there. There is going to be more conflicts. To me, the floodgates could open. If not, I mean, it's basically saying let's ignore what Capital has out there, albeit it's single phase. I understand that. But MDU's cost to upgrade are
wouldn't it imply, though, if my premise was correct, that what MDU was quote-unquote guaranteed, you're guaranteed everything outside of that. So that would make your case.
It seems to me you might be ignoring the investments that MDU has made in that area and that already exists as well.
They put on evidence that they have the line coming down and serving those customers in McKenzie. I don't want to downplay that. It's there. I mean, it's just I'm looking at the static factors that are there, and that's there. I don't want to downplay that. They've been serving them for, as Mr. Kuhn said, for 50 years. I don't want to do that.
And they'll continue to serve them because those investments are there. So our job is to weigh, you know, which. Mm-hmm. Which is less wasteful for serving the growing area in that, you know, in the McKenzie region, recognizing that they do already have investments there. It's different than if there was, you know, just a big load occurring out in a rural area that they didn't have an investment near to facilitate, you know, some sort of an extension. Mm-hmm. So how is it that you guys are less wasteful than they are in terms of making investments to serve this new load?
I'm looking at what they have to duplicate that we have there. The load is already there. Do both companies need to make extensions? Absolutely, and upgrades. These factors can be viewed for a whole host from different angles, like I said. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not arguing that this is a slam dunk by any means. I'm just saying that from our perspective, because the load is already there and our cost to get there are less, that because of those, some of these factors for duplication and the economic development, it should tip in our favor. Did I answer your question?
Mr. Olson, if I may, what exactly is Capital alleging to be the wasteful duplication? My reading, I think, without coming out and saying it, is it certainly seems like the substation upgrade at McKenzie would be the wasteful duplication. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the load, it's the capacity that the Minocan substation has that it can carry the MDU site and also additional growth that may come anywhere that is served by the Minocan substation.
So then the commission would need to find the McKenzie sub is wasteful on part of MDU. And then at some point in the future, let's say this plant gets built and there's ancillary growth and MDU is forced to upgrade the sub at McKenzie, is MDU then precluded by this commission's decision in this case from upgrading the substation at McKenzie, since we would have found it wasteful in this case?
I don't think so. I mean, basically, MDU could have upgraded 3 years ago the substation for whatever reasons, but it hasn't done so. So we're forced to look at the substations as it currently sits, and that's where we're at. They hadn't done an upgrade to that substation beforehand, and so we're left with those static factors today. So that does not preclude them from upgrading that substation in the future.
I'm not sure that a big upgrade like that in a village that has showed very little growth would have gone over very well with this commission for a regulated utility like that. But So my question for you is the capacity that seems to be available from your Minocan substation, is there growth on the development that was factored into the decision to build that substation with that much capacity, or was that an example of overbuilding?
I can't speak to that, Commissioner Chrisman. I guess that wasn't put into evidence, and I guess I'm not aware of whether it was an upgrade, whether they're in routine maintenance and they just increased the capacity because it's 2014. I have no idea. I can't speak to that.
Mr. Olson, I have a couple other questions on this as well. If the Minocan sub for capital were to go down, would Menards be in a different position than if the McKenzie sub for MDU were to go down?
I think Mr. Kuntz correctly stated that it provides partial redundancy. It doesn't at this point create total redundancy.
That's but Sterling sub.
The Sterling sub. If the Minocan went down, Capital Sterling substation could provide partial redundancy, meaning that it would not go totally out, so it could keep up. I believe the testimony was Ron Lipp testified that roughly half. It could serve roughly half of the Menards site until the Minocan substation came back online. So that would be a difference in reliability from our perspective. Did that answer your question?
Sure, and that kind of leads into the next one, too, about the Sterling sub. Your brief was heavy on the possibility that could be upgraded to provide total redundancy, but is there any evidence in the record to support that it will be upgraded?
The only thing in the record was that the approximate cost upgrade would be $40,000, but for me to say that it was said that it was planned, that was not in the record.
Okay, thank you.
Just want to briefly address, very quickly, one last time. Mr. Kalk, Commissioner Kalk, you were asking about the eastern part of McKenzie. The reason that I addressed that was because during one of the working sessions, it was it seemed to me that the discussion was important amongst the commissioners of who would serve that load, because there was some testimony about questions about a gas station popping up. And to me, the line of questioning was talking about the eastern part. That's why it was addressed. I think the TIA right now says that MDU must get a certificate of public use and necessity to serve that area, based on what I put in my brief. Mr. Kuntz referenced the statute 58-06-01 and cited subsection 11. That wasn't the grant of a franchise. That was the township allowing people to give a right-of-way, which is greatly different than a franchise. If you look under the rules for municipalities of granting franchises, it's very specific. Under the township statute, it says that these are the powers that they have. They must be enumerated, or they must be there to deal with these powers. To say that grants a franchise, I think, is a great stretch. I mean, basically, municipalities, which is a city under North Dakota law, has the ability to grant franchises for 20 years. And then for them to argue that their 1928, their certificate carries the day, when in 2008 they went to the township board and had them sign a document that looks to be an ordinance, which refers to a city and a municipality, to me, they're doing something there because they're worried about something. And to me, that their 2008 franchise possibly can't grant anything. So they must be relying on something that's 70 or 80 years old.
So your perfect outcome in this case would be you get Menards and all of anything east of...
I just addressed that I think it's a question mark, and we don't know where the growth is going. We just know there's farmland up there. I don't want to make that a big issue because it's not, but there was some discussion on it, and it happened to be that it took 5 pages in my brief, and I think it is a very small issue. So anyway, in looking at some of the primary factors, I think that the duplication, albeit we can argue whether it's wasteful or not, but there is duplication of a load that MDU wants to do based on what is present right now. So we do think that there's wasteful duplication. That's one of the primary factors. The other primary factors is avoiding conflict. I think ruling for Capital Electric will minimize more conflicts in the future. There was some discussion about rate shopping. Whether or not that happened, I have no idea, but I don't know how a large facility or corporation isn't going to take that more into account if they can then go to both people, see who's cheaper, ignore the load that the rural cooperative may have and the electric services that are right around there, and not go to the one that's cheaper. I think it will have that necessary result, which will increase the conflicts before this commission. So for all these...
I'd like you to explain again how you think this a ruling for capital will avoid future conflicts.
In this case, the fact, you know, after we did discovery, it became clear that MDU knew that capital had a single-phase system that wrapped around it. And after we both did discovery, it was discovered that our load was sufficient. And they were their expansions were a lot greater than ours were. They have three-phase that comes in, but it doesn't help them at all. They have to upgrade it. Basically, I think that if you rule for MDU, it gives the public utilities, maybe later on, their chances of going at a larger load later is that much greater, because they can go, oh, we see that rural cooperative does have stuff, does have facilities that surround that site, and their cost to get there is cheaper, and they already have the load, but you know what? We're going to initiate the conflict anyway. We're going to go and get it because they already gave MDU the Menards site. Why wouldn't we want to do that? And so I just think that that's one way in which it'll foster more conflict, because why wouldn't a public utility want to go after a load that has revenues of $300,000 to $400,000 a year? So I think if you ruled for capital, it causes the public utilities more caution before initiating a fight. It could say, well, look at this one that happened in the past. You know, the facts are similar. Why would we want to go and spend the money and initiate another conflict? Because they're going to rule similar to like they did before. I think you can stop the floodgates from even opening at this point if you rule in favor of capital. So unless there's any other questions, I think the primary purposes of the TIA certainly favor capital. If there's two things that I would want the commission to read one more time before deciding this case, it would be the conclusions of both MDU and capital in their briefs. I think it's a good summation, and it shows that the strengths of the TIA follow in favor of capital. I don't think capital needs to apologize that the TIA is there. It's been law for a long time. So thank you.
Mr. Olson, I have a couple questions.
Sure.
And realizing this might ask you to delve into the mindset of your client, which you can't really do, but in light of the allegations regarding the franchise granted to MDU by the Village of McKenzie, why has there been no complaints by Capital in the past 50 years?
I would be totally speculating.
Okay.
I know that the growth, there was testimony that the town has shrunk, so I don't know if there's been more. Maybe they probably haven't been aware of anything. I have no idea.
Okay.
So I'll quit speculating.
So on the 10 factors that we have to consider here, many of them seem to me, so close that you almost can't decide which one favors which party. Except for customer preference, there's a definite preference there and a definite favor to MDU. What do you think counters that from your standpoint in favor of Capital Electric? Which one or several of these factors outweigh that?
Sure. I suppose it would be the duplication, so that would be the eighth factor.
And what do you say to their contention that they'll probably have to upgrade this anyway just to serve some growth within McKenzie, in which case that completely evaporates the duplication?
Yeah, I guess what I would say to that is there was no evidence of that. They didn't present evidence of – there was a question about a gas station. We can assume a whole lot of things. We have to rule, make findings based on what's before the commission. And there was no evidence of that presented. There was some testimony by Steve Manor about, yeah, usually when this happens there's some ancillary growth. But there was no testimony as where it would be.
Okay.
Whether it would be up by the interstate. I mean, there's a whole host of things that we don't know, and I don't think we can look in a crystal ball. So that would be my response to that we must look at the static factors.
Mm-hmm. So duplication, anything else?
Duplication, basically, In my brief, you know, I argue that a lot of these are rule in front of capital. So I guess I would point you to my brief. I think that a lot of them are so close. I think, you know, the reliability, I think the partial redundancy is important for a whole. It is partial. I can't say that it's going to be done, but that's important. If the substations go down, the only company that can provide power is capital. I guess I'd point you to my brief. I find that some of them, you know, I feel like we made concessions where we needed to, and I feel like MDU is being disingenuous on some of these. Number 9 is one of the ones where it says, is it probable that the location in question will be included within the corporate limits of a municipality within the foreseeable future? There, MDU gives that a tie. Basically, there was no testament that it's going to happen, so that has to favor the rural cooperative because it's a rural area. And even there, MDU can't concede that. So I feel like concessions have been made, and I think that the factors, depending on how you look at the facts, I think most of them can fall in favor of capital, primarily in looking at the two primary purposes of the TIA that MDU isn't discussing.
I'm finding myself focused on this area of conflicts and avoiding the conflicts. It seems to me if in order to have companies and have a system whereby we try to avoid conflicts, the companies have to do a really fair assessment of their investments in an area, things that already exist, and then what makes the most sense for growth after from there. Do you feel that your two parties have done that in this case, really fairly assessed the existing investments in these areas and what makes most sense for growth?
I guess I can only speak for my client. I would say that they did an assessment and feel that this growth should be theirs. Whether or not the parties did that together in this case, I would say it probably didn't occur because it's just a perfect storm of goofy factors that it's an enormous load, and there was just, I think here there was, I think they've worked well together in the past, and this just was a perfect storm. I don't think there's any ill will with regards to this. It just happens to be that these factors are all present.
Much of our discussion this morning regarding reliability has had to do with outages and what would happen. But as I recall Mr. Manner's testimony, a lot of what I recall him emphasizing was voltage drop and the harmfulness that can have to their motors and such. Does Capital Electric dispute that the farther away the substation is from the end user, the more likelihood of that type of voltage drop there is?
I guess I don't know. I haven't spoken with my client. I would say that both voltage drop studies were within their acceptable standards. I mean, I guess I don't. I honestly haven't spoken with them, so I wouldn't be able to speak as to your direct question. I know they're both within the standards.
Okay. Along those lines, Mr. Olson, Mr. Coons offered argument and cited some authority in his brief about the commission in the past having taken into account the distance of radio lines from a sub to a customer. What would be your argument why that does or does not apply? I assume it does not apply in this matter.
This is, again, how the facts can be viewed differently. Here, we could point out that MDU's overhead distribution, it's an overhead distribution line, so it's subject to the elements, rain, sleet, ice, and that it can go down. MDU can then point to, well, your line is longer and it's buried. Therefore, if there's a problem, it's going to take longer time to fix. The counter to that is, well, it's underground, there's less problems. Here, I think there was testimony or there was argument today that we had 8 miles of radio line to their one, there'd be 1.6, I suppose. I think there was testimony that it's looped. And so I think there was only roughly 1 mile of radio line for Capital Electric, not 8 miles because it's looped with the different substations. So basically, to answer your question, these facts, depending on what you want to emphasize, can be viewed both in favor of MDU and Capital. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you. And I do have one other question, too. On the last factor, will service of either supplier be unreasonably interfered with service or system of the other? Mr. Coons briefly addressed this at the end of his oral argument, and it's briefly touched upon at the very end of your brief as well. It says that allowing MDU to serve the site will interfere with Capital Electric's facilities. What evidence is on the record to support that that statement?
I guess the testimony that I was referring to there was that they'd be crossing the lines, and then the sense that in other cases before the commission, there's always a push that when it's near the site, the crossing the lines is usually something that's viewed upon. So that's what I was referring to there.
Does it matter, in your opinion, if it's a single-phase versus a three-phase line that's being crossed by the alternate one?
For purposes of this factor, no. It was just pointing out that there was a crossing of the lines.
Thank you.
To follow up on Commissioner Christman's question about the outages, MDU and I had a discussion about I thought it was tough to compare outages because there was no baseline. What would your thoughts be on that?
Yeah, for that to be taken into a huge consideration here would be hard because there was no testimony by either based on what each company qualifies as an outage. So basically, we're looking at raw data with no testimony as to what those exhibits mean. So I can't give any more enlightenment into that.
Thank you.
Does that conclude your argument?
It does. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Norell, you got any additional questions?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions? Okay. Mr. Kuntz, you have, is it 2.5 minutes, Mr. Lafferty? 2.5 minutes of argument for rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. One of the things I definitely want to address is a comment Commissioner Kalk made about, well, this is, you know, I recognize Montana, Dakota service territory within McKenzie. Everything outside there should be Capital Electric. That is absolutely wrong. And there was a statement, I think, Commissioner Kalk, with all due respect, that you made during the working sessions that Montana, Dakota must have recognized this wasn't part of their service territory. Otherwise, they wouldn't have applied for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. The Supreme Court has stated that a co-op is not the preferred provider outside of a municipality. All it is an unregulated provider outside a municipality. We have got just as much right to serve a customer outside a municipality as does Capital Electric. The difference is they're totally unregulated. In order for us to serve it, we have to come in and get a certificate of public convenience and necessity, and that's what if we believe that this is something that we should be able to serve under the criteria that have been set forth by this commission and the Supreme Court, we have got that is as much our service territory as it is Capital Electric. So I definitely disagree with that particular statement, and I mean, they were created, yes, to serve rural areas that were unserved by us, but that doesn't mean that every rural area is their service territory. If it's something that we can serve under these criteria, then we're entitled to a certificate of public convenience and necessity. And I would, Mr. Olson referred to a document that this commission had granted to us in 1928. That document is page 2 of Exhibit 11. It's headed Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. That's what we have to serve the city of McKenzie. With respect to the franchise, although the Board of Township Supervisors language that I cited to you doesn't use the word franchise, that's what a franchise is. It allows you to put your facilities in the streets and rights away of the public streets and rights away. So when that area is platted and there's going to be streets in there, we will have the right. We don't have to go get easements or anything else. If those are going to be public rights away, we already have the right to put our wires in there. That's what a franchise is. And although that statute doesn't use the word franchise, it has the power to grant electric utility companies the authority to use those streets and right-of-ways for its system. I think wasteful duplication. Step back when you're deciding this case. Do you really think that the upgrade of the McKenzie substation is a wasteful duplication? I mean, I don't know when Montana, Dakota would have to upgrade this substation. I'll have to stop there. I've used up my time. I'm sorry.
Mr. Kuntz's time is up, but I would ask, do any of the commissioners have questions, any additional questions that they would like addressed at this time?
I don't know what the protocol is, but we asked a lot of questions of Mr. Kuntz. I don't know, can he get another 2 minutes? Is that allowable or is that all wrong? I'd like him at least to have a chance to wrap up his case, if you will.
Well, his argument time is up. But if there are questions that the commissioners, specific questions that the commissioners would like to have addressed, they can go ahead and ask those questions. Okay. But Mr. Kuntz doesn't get any additional argument time.
I have one more question for you, Dan, and that is, I keep coming back to the Supreme Court language that says just what you just said, that you don't, the rural areas don't automatically go to the cooperatives, but that you have to obtain an IOU, has to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity, and show that public convenience and necessity reasonably requires such extension. So I'm focused on the word requires.
Well,
what requires you to have this?
Certainly from requires, this, there's a need out there for this customer to have service. There's absolutely no question. I mean, this isn't a case where we're extending wires out to an empty field. There is a need for electric service at this location. Now the question is, who's in the best position to provide that electric service under the considerations that the commission has set forth in its notice of hearing? The need is there. The requirement to serve that customer is there. The question is, okay, of the two providers here, who's in the best position to provide that service? That's the considerations that you have in your notice of hearing. Those are the considerations that the Supreme Court has adopted.
I don't have any more questions.
Okay. That concludes the oral argument, and we are off the record.
Thank you.